The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Audiobook Break with Audiophile Magazine, where twice a week you can hear unabridged classic audiobooks, one chapter at a time. We're listening to Homer's The Iliad, read by Anton Lesser and published by Naxos Audiobooks.
Book 10, A Night Raid. By their ships, Achaea's most important leaders slept through the night, overpowered by soft sleep, all except Agamemnon, son of Atreus. Sweet slumber did not enfold this shepherd of his people, for his mind was disturbed with many worries. Just as when Zeus, husband of fair-haired Hera, flashes lightning to announce a massive rainstorm, an immense downpour of hail or snow when fields are sprinkled white, or to foretell some bitter warfare, the gaping jaws of battle. In just that way, then, the groans reverberated in Agamemnon's chest, deep in his heart, making his whole body tremble. Every time he looked out on the Trojan plain, he was overcome at the sight of countless fires burning in front of Ilium, at the sound of flutes, pipes, the loud noise all those soldiers made. Looking back at the Achaean army and the ships, he tugged many tufts of hair out of his scalp, roots and all, praying to high Zeus above, his brave heart groaning. To him, the best plan seemed to be to go to Nestor, son of Neleus, before seeing anybody else, to check if he could come up with some good advice, some plan, to save all the Danaans. So he got up, slipped a tunic on over his chest, laced up fine sandals over his sleek feet, and then put on a tawny lion-skin, large and fiery red, extending to his feet. Then he got his spear. Menelaus, too, was troubled with anxieties. No sleep sat on his eyelids either. He was afraid Argives would be hurt, those who on his account had crossed wide seas to Troy, planning to make war. He covered his broad back with a spotted leopard skin, picked up his bronze helmet, set it on his head, then picked a spear up in his powerful fist. Next he went to rouse his brother, commander of the Argives, who worshipped him just like a god. Menelaus found him putting his fine armor on by his ship's stern. Agamemnon welcomed him as he approached. Menelaus, skilled in war cries, spoke first. "Brother, you're arming yourself. Why? Are you going to encourage some companion to scout the Trojans out? I really doubt that anyone will do that for you, set off to spy against a hostile force under the cover of immortal night. Such work would require a courageous heart." Mighty Agamemnon answered Menelaus, "You and I, Lord Menelaus, need advice, some shrewd plan, to protect or save the Argives, together with their ships. Zeus's mind has changed. His heart prefers Hector's sacrifices more than ours, for I've never witnessed yet, nor heard anyone report how one man made so much havoc in a single day as Hector, Zeus's friend, has brought upon us, Achaea's sons, all by himself. He's not a god, nor even a god's son, but he's damaged Argives in a major way, with actions they'll recall for many years to come. That's how badly Hector's harmed Achaeans. But come, why don't you run quickly by the ships to summon Ajax and Idomeneus? I'll go for godlike Nestor to rouse him, see if he wants to check our watchmen, and tell that strong company what they should do. They'll attend to him ahead of anyone, because his son is captain of the sentries along with Meriones, an officer of Idomeneus. We entrusted them above all others with this special work. Menelaus, expert at war cries, then replied, "How do you want me to carry out your orders? Shall I stay there with them, wait for you to come, or hurry back to you, once I've told them your instructions?" Agamemnon, king of men, answered Menelaus, "Stay there in case we somehow miss each other as we go, for there are many pathways through the camp. But make sure you call out each place you pass, telling troops to stay awake. Call each soldier by his father's name, complimenting all of them. Don't make a show of your own proud heart. We must work hard, too. That's what Zeus charged us with when we were born, a heavy burden of responsibility." Agamemnon spoke, then sent his brother off with detailed orders. Then he set out to find Nestor, shepherd of his people. He came across him beside his hut and his black ship on a soft bed. His fine armor lay there with him, shield, two spears, his glittering helmet, and that shining belt which the old man strapped around him every time he armed himself to lead his troops in battles which destroy men's lives. Nestor made no concessions to the infirmities of age. Sitting up there, head resting on his arm, he spoke to Agamemnon, questioning him. "Why are you alone like this, wandering among the ships throughout the camp in the pitch-dark night while others sleep? What are you looking for, a mule, some comrade? Tell me. Don't approach in silence. What do you need?" Agamemnon, king of men, then replied, "O Nestor, son of Neleus, great glory of Achaeans, you should recognize me, Agamemnon, son of Atreus, the one whom Zeus always loads with miserable fortune, more so than any other men, so long as breath stays in my chest and movement in my limbs. I'm wandering like this since sweet sleep won't sit upon my eyelids. Instead, this war, this danger to Achaeans has me worried. I'm dreadfully afraid for the Danaans. My spirit isn't resolute. It wavers. My heart's about to burst outside my chest. My fine limbs tremble. If you want some action, since sleep hasn't come to you here either, go with me. We'll walk down to the sentries and check if they're exhausted and asleep, worn out, forgetting to maintain a watch. Hostile troops are camped close by. We don't know if somehow they may be keen to fight at night." Geranian horseman Nestor then said in reply, "Glorious son of Atreus, king of men, Agamemnon, counselor Zeus won't fulfill all the things that Hector has in mind, all his present hopes. In my opinion, Hector will be struggling with more troubles than you face. If Achilles changes his fond heart from its hard anger, yes, I'll come with you. And let's get other leaders stirring also. Tydeus' son, famous for his spear, Odysseus, swift Ajax, and Phyleus' brave son. Someone should go summon two more men, godlike Ajax and Lord Idomeneus. Their ships aren't near here, they're a long way off. But I have some harsh words for Menelaus, although he's a friend and I respect him. I won't hide that, even if I anger you, for he's still sleeping, leaving you alone to do the work. Right now he should be active, working on all the finest men, begging them to help us. The need confronting us is urgent." Agamemnon, king of men, replied to Nestor, "Old man, at other times I'd urge you on to criticize him, for often he holds back, reluctant to carry out the heavy tasks, not because he's lazy or soft in the head, but because he's looking for my signal, waiting for me to make a move. But this time he was up and moving well ahead of me. He came to see me. I sent him off to summon those very men you mention. Let's go. We'll find them right before the gates where I ordered them to meet the sentries." Geranian horseman Nestor then replied, "If that's the case, none of the Argives will say bad things of him or disobey when he stirs them on or issues orders." With these words, Nestor put a tunic on his chest, laced lovely sandals over his sleek feet. Around him he buckled on a purple cloak in a double fold, one thickly lined with wool. Selecting a strong spear with a sharp bronze point, he set off on his way down to the bronze-clad Achaean ships. The first person Geranian horseman Nestor roused from sleep was Odysseus. equal to the gods for wise advice. Nestor called out to him. His voice entered Odysseus' mind at once. He came from his hut, then questioned Nestor. What are you doing here, going around alone like this among the ships in the immortal night? Is there something urgent? Geranian horseman Nestor answered Odysseus. Divinely bred son of Laertes, resourceful Odysseus, don't be angry. Achaeans are experiencing much suffering. But come now, so we may rouse another man, someone who should be there when we discuss our plans, whether we should flee or battle on. Nestor finished speaking. Resourceful Odysseus went into his hut, then slung across his shoulder his finely decorated shield, and set off with them to find noble Diomedes, son of Tydeus. They came across him with his weapons outside his hut. His comrades were asleep around him, their shields under their heads, spears driven upright in the ground by the butt spike. Their bronze spear points glittered like Father Zeus's lightning. Diomedes slept with the hide of a field ox spread out under him and a bright rug beneath his head. Approaching him, Geranian horseman Nestor shoved him with his foot, waking him up. Nestor then said teasingly, "Wake up, son of Tydeus! Why sleep all night long? Aren't you aware the Trojans are encamped here on the edges of the plain, near the ships, only a short distance off?" Nestor spoke. Diomedes woke up quickly, then answered him. His words had wings. "Old man, you're a hard one. You never stop working. What about Achaea's other sons, the younger ones? Can't each of them go round waking up the kings? You, old man, we can't do anything to check you." Geranian horseman Nestor answered Diomedes. "My friend, everything you say is true enough. I have excellent sons and many soldiers. Any of them could go around with orders. But Achaeans here are in their greatest need, for now things stand upon a razor's edge. Miserable destruction for Achaeans or their salvation. You're a younger man, so if you feel compassion for me, set off and wake up Meges and swift Ajax." Nestor spoke. Diomedes threw a lion skin around his shoulders, a huge red pelt which reached his feet. Then Diomedes grabbed a spear and went away. He woke those warriors and brought them back with him. When they joined up with the company of sentries, they did not find the captains of the watchmen sleeping. They were all sitting with their weapons wide awake. Just as dogs maintain a tired watch over their sheep in some farmyard when they hear a savage beast who's just moved down from wooded hills, men and dogs raising a din around it so those dogs get no rest, that's how sweet sleep had left those sentries' eyelids as they kept guard that wretched night, always turning toward the plain, in case they heard the Trojans coming. Old man Nestor was pleased to see them. He called out, speaking winged words of encouragement. "That's the way, dear friends, to keep good watch. Don't let sleep seize on any one of you, so we don't bring pleasure to our enemies." With these words, Nestor hurried through the ditch. Argive kings, those who'd been called to council, accompanied him. Meriones went, as did Thrasymedes too, Nestor's noble son, who'd been asked to join the group. They went through the scooped-out ditch. Then, in an open spot, they sat down where there seemed to be no corpses, no bodies of the slain. It was where fearful Hector turned back from killing Argives once night hid everything. Sitting down there, they talked to one another. Then Geranian horseman Nestor began to speak. "My friends, is there some man confident enough of his own daring spirit to venture out among stout-hearted Trojans to see if he can trap an enemy soldier, some straggler, or catch wind of some report of what the Trojans say among themselves, whether they are keen to stay beside the ships away from home or to go back to the city now that they have beaten the Achaeans? A man who could find this out and get back here, return to us unharmed, would be famous among all men living under heaven, and get rich gifts as well. For our best men, those commanding every ship, will give him a black sheep with suckling lamb. Compared to that, there's no possession finer. At banquets and our drinking parties, he'll be always there." Nestor spoke. The others were quiet, saying nothing. Then Diomedes, expert in war cries, spoke up. "Nestor, My heart and my proud spirit prompt me to infiltrate the hostile Trojans' camp, which stands close by. But another man should come with me. Things would go much better. We'd have more confidence. When two set out, one may see something good before the other. A man alone might notice it, but his mind is less perceptive, less resourceful than two. Diomedes spoke. Many men wished to volunteer. The two Ajaxes, attendants of the war god Ares, were willing, Meriones too, and Nestor's son was really eager. Famous spearman Menelaus, son of Atreus, was ready, and brave Odysseus was keen to steal into the Trojan army, for the spirit in his chest was always daring. Then Agamemnon, king of men, spoke up. Diomedes, son of Tydeus, you delight my heart. But you must choose the other man. Take the one you want, the best of those in view. Many are keen. Don't reject the better man, following a sense of duty in your mind, taking someone less worthy as your comrade, thinking only of his birth. Don't do that, even if the second is the greater king. Agamemnon spoke, afraid for fair-haired Menelaus. Diomedes, skilled in war cries, spoke to them again. If you bid me choose a companion for myself, how could I reject godlike Odysseus, with his heart and daring spirit always eager for every challenge? Pallas Athene loves him. With Odysseus at my side, we'd both return even from blazing fire, for he knows better than other men how to use his mind. Odysseus, that long-suffering godlike man, replied, Son of Tydeus, don't overpraise me or censure me. You're speaking to the Argives who know everything about me. Let's go. Night is passing quickly. Dawn approaches. The stars have shifted forward. Most of the night has passed, two-thirds of it, with one-third left. This said, the two men pulled on fearful armor. Warlike Thrasymedes gave a two-edged sword to the son of Tydeus, for he'd left his own beside the ships, and a shield as well. On his head he put a helmet made of leather, without crest or plume, what people call a skullcap. It protected heads of brave young men. Meriones gave Odysseus bow, quiver, and a sword. On his head Odysseus set a hide cap, on the inside skillfully reinforced with leather thongs. Outside, wild boar's white teeth were placed here and there, strategically and well. In between these layers was a piece of felt. This cap had once been stolen by Autolycus from Amyntor, or Minos' son. He'd broken in his well-built home in Ilion. Sometime later, Autolycus gave it to Amphidamas of Cythera to take to his home in Scandea. Amphidamas then gave the cap to Molus as a present for his hospitality. Molus later gave it to his son, Meriones. And now it sat there, covering Odysseus' head. The two men, having put their fearful armor on, set off, leaving behind there all the most important chiefs. On their right, close to the path, Pallas Athene sent them a heron. In the darkness of the night, they didn't see it with their eyes, but they heard its cry. Odysseus was pleased with this omen of the bird. He prayed then to Athene. Child of aegis-bearing Zeus, untiring goddess, hear me. You've always stood beside me in all sorts of troubles. I don't move without your watching me. But now especially be my friend Athene. Grant that we two come back to the ships covered in glory after doing something great, something the Trojans will regret. Then noble Diomedes, skilled in war cries, prayed. Child of Zeus, invincible goddess, hear me. Stand by me as you did my father, Lord Tydeus at Thebes, that time he went as messenger, sent there by Achaeans. He'd left bronze-clad Achaeans at the Asopus, taking peace proposals to Cadmeans. On his way back, he did some fearful things with keen support from you, divine goddess. Be willing now to stand by me like that. Protect me, and I'll sacrifice to you an unbroken yearling ox with a broad head, which no man yet has put beneath the yoke. I'll make that sacrifice to you and more. On that beast I'll plate both horns with gold. So they prayed. And Pallas Athene heard them. Their prayers to the daughter of great Zeus complete, They continued on their way like two lions in the darkness of night, through the slaughter, through corpses, armor, through black pools of blood. For his part, Hector did not let his proud Trojans go to sleep. He called their finest men together, all the ones who commanded Trojans' troops with all their rulers. To those assembled, he laid out a shrewd idea. "Is there someone who'll undertake for me an exploit? Who'll do it for a worthy gift? I guarantee he'll get a fine reward. I'll give a chariot and two strong-necked horses, the finest ones there are by those fast ships of the Achaeans, to any man who dares, who's fit to seize the glory for himself, by approaching close to those swift ships to find out whether they're being guarded as before, or whether those men, beaten at our hands, plan among themselves to flee, and no longer wish to keep alert at night, exhausted by their desperate efforts." Hector finished. They all sat there in silence, saying nothing. Now among the Trojans was a man called Dolon, son of Eumedes, a sacred herald, a man rich in gold and bronze. Dolon wasn't much to look at, but he ran fast. He was the only male child with five sisters. At that point, he spoke up to Hector and the Trojans. "Hector, my heart and my proud spirit prompts me to volunteer to sneak up to those fast ships and find out what I can. But come, raise your scepter. Swear to me that you'll give me those horses and that chariot, decorated all in bronze, which carry the fine son of Peleus. I'll not be a useless scout or disappoint you. I'll go straight through the army till I reach Agamemnon's ship, where their best men must be in council, talking of their plans, whether to flee or to continue fighting." Dolon spoke. Holding up his scepter, Hector swore, "Let Zeus himself, Hera's loud thundering husband, be my witness that no other Trojan will be carried by those horses. I affirm that you will glory in them all your life." Hector spoke. He'd sworn an empty oath, but Dolon was encouraged. At once he slung across his shoulder his curved bow, then threw a grey wolfskin on it. On his head he set a cap of marten skin, grabbed a sharp spear, and set off, going from the camp towards the ships. He would not be coming back, bringing Hector information from the ships. But when he left the crowd of men and horses, he went eagerly along the path. As he moved, noble Odysseus saw him and said to Diomedes, "Diomedes, someone's coming from the camp. I don't know if he's going to scout our ships or strip some dead man's corpse. Let's let him at first get past us on the plain, just a bit. Then we can go after him and catch him fast. If his feet outrun ours, we'll keep following him and chase him from his camp towards our ships. Keep brandishing your spear behind him, so he doesn't make it to the city." After these words, the two men lay down beside the road among the corpses. Dolon ran past them quickly, quite unaware. When he'd gone about as far as mules plough in a single day, and in deep fields they outwork oxen pulling double-jointed ploughs, the two men ran after him. When he heard their noise, Dolon stopped, hoping in his heart that they were comrades who'd come from the Trojans to get him to turn back, Hector having changed the orders. But when they came within the distance of a spear throw or even less, he saw that they were enemies and started running, to get away as quickly as his legs could carry him. They set off, chasing him with speed. Just as when two dogs, skilled hunting hounds with sharp fangs, harass some doe or hare relentlessly across a wooded country, the prey screaming as it runs. That's how Tydeus' son and Odysseus, destroyer of cities, pursued him, keeping Dolon from his people with their constant chase. When Dolon was about to run into the sentries in his flight towards the ships, at that point Athene put fighting power into Tydeus' son, so no bronze-clad Achaean could make the boast that he'd hit Dolon first, and that Diomedes had come up later. Springing forward with his spear, powerful Diomedes yelled, "Stop, or I'll hit you with my spear. I don't think you'll long escape complete destruction at my hands." Diomedes shouted this, then threw the spear, deliberately missing Dolon. The polished spear point sailed over his right shoulder, then stuck in the ground. Dolon just stood there terrified, stammering, pale with fear. His teeth were chattering in his mouth. The two men ran up, panting, and grabbed his hands. Dolon began to cry and beg. Take me alive, and I'll ransom myself. At home there is bronze, gold, well-wrought iron. My father will give you lots of it, an immense ransom, if he once finds out I'm at Achaean ships and still alive. Crafty Odysseus smiled at him and said, Don't worry. Don't let death weigh down your heart. Come now, tell me, and be sure to speak the truth. Why are you going like this to the ships alone, away from your army in the dead of night when other warriors are fast asleep? Are you going to strip some dead man's body? Or has Hector sent you as a spy to learn something about the hollow ships? Or did your own spirit prompt you to this? Dolon answered Odysseus, his limbs trembling.
Hector led my mind astray with foolish hopes, lots of them. He promised he'd give me the sure-footed horses of Achilles, Peleus' excellent son, and his chariot with its bronze decoration. He told me to venture out into the swift dark night, get close to hostile troops, and then find out if they were guarding the swift ships as before, or whether now we have defeated them. They were planning flight among themselves, unwilling to keep up watch at night, exhausted by their desperate efforts.
Shrewd Odysseus, still smiling, then continued. Your heart has been ambitious for big gifts. Those horses of warrior Achilles, descendant of Aeacus, are hard to manage or control for any mortal person, except Achilles, son of an immortal mother. Tell me now, and be sure to speak the truth. When you came here, where did you leave Hector, shepherd to his people? Where's his armor? Where are his horses? How are the sentries of the other Trojans set? Where are they sleeping? Tell me what they talk of amongst themselves, whether they're eager to stay here by the ships, quite far from home, or whether they'll return to the city with Achaeans beaten. Dolon, son of Eumedes, answered Odysseus, I'll answer you in this quite truthfully. Right now, Hector is with his advisers, holding a council meeting by the tomb of godlike Ilus, some distance from the noise. As for the guards you asked about, noble sir, there's nothing special to protect the troops or keep lookout. By all Trojan watchfires, as necessity requires, there are men who stay awake, calling to each other to keep up their guard. But the allied force which comes from many lands is sleeping. They leave it to the Trojans to stay on watch, for their wives and children aren't close by. Crafty Odysseus, with a smile, then asked Dolon, Now, those allies, are they intermingled with horse-taming Trojans where they sleep, or separate from them? Tell me. I need to know. Dolon, son of Eumedes, answered Odysseus, I can reveal the truth of this as well. By the sea, Lycaonians, Paeonians with their curved bows, Lelegians, Corcones, godlike Pelasgians. Around Thymbri are positioned Lycians, Mysians, impetuous fighters, Phrygians, who fight on horseback, and from Maeonia there are charioteers. But why ask me details of these matters? If you're keen to infiltrate the Trojan army, over there are Thracians, fresh troops, new arrivals, furthest distant from the rest, among them their king Rhesus, son of Aeonius. His horses are the best, the finest and largest ones I've ever seen, whiter than snow, as fast as the winds. His chariot is finely built with gold and silver. He came here with his armor, an amazing sight, huge and made of gold. It's not appropriate for mortal men to wear such armor, only deathless gods. But take me now to your fast ships, or else tie me up. Leave me here in painful fetters, so you can go and check out my story, see whether I have told the truth or not. Mighty Diomedes scowled at Dolon and said, Don't fill your heart with thoughts you'll get away, Dolon, even though your news is good. You've fallen in our hands. Now, if we were to release you or set you free for ransom, you'd come back to the swift Achaean ships, either to spy or fight us openly. But if my hands subdue you and you die, you'll pose no problems for the Argives later. As Diomedes finished, Dolon was intending to cup his chin with his strong hand in supplication. But with his sword, Diomedes jumped at him, slashed him across the middle of his neck, slicing through both tendons. Dolon's head rolled in the dust as he was speaking. They stripped the cap of marten skin, then took the wolf hide, long spear, and his curved bow. Lord Odysseus held these objects high above him for Athene, goddess of battle spoils, and prayed. Goddess, these are for you to bring you joy. We invoke you, first of all immortal gods living on Olympus. Send us on again to where the Thracians sleep, and to those horses. So Odysseus prayed. He lifted the lute up high, placed it on a tamarisk bush, then set there a clear marker, grabbing up reeds and branches of tamarisk in full bloom, so they wouldn't miss finding the spoils in the dark night when they returned. The two proceeded on through weapons and black blood. They quickly reached the camp of Thracian soldiers. The men were sleeping, worn out by their hard work. Their lovely armor lay on the ground beside them, properly arranged in triple rows. Beside each man stood his yoked horses. In the middle, Rhesus slept. Close by him, his swift horses tethered with their straps to the chariot's top rail. Odysseus saw him first. He pointed him out to Diomedes. There's our man, Diomedes. And these are the horses which Dolon told us of, the man we killed. Come now, let's see that mighty strength of yours. It's not right for you to stand there idly with your weapons. So loose those horses, or else kill the men while I take care of them. Odysseus spoke. Athene, with her glittering eyes, breathed fighting power into Diomedes. Moving around everywhere, he began the killing. Agonizing groans came from those his sword then butchered. The earth grew soggy with their blood. Just as a lion comes across an unguarded flock of sheep or goats and leaps on them, heart thirsting for the kill, so Tydeus' son went at those Thracian soldiers until he'd butchered 12. Whenever Diomedes stood over some man he'd just killed with his sword, crafty Odysseus from behind would grab his feet and drag the body clear. For his mind was planning how he might steal the fine maned horses easily, if he didn't frighten them by making them step on dead men's bodies, for they were not used to that. Tydeus' son came across the king, the 13th man whose sweet life he had taken. Rhesus lay there in his last gasp. A bad dream had stood beside his head that night, a device sent by Athene, and that dream was the son of Tydeus. Meanwhile, bold Odysseus untied the sure-footed horses, roped them together, and drove them from the camp, prodding them with his bow, for he had forgotten to pick up the shining whip from the ornate chariot. Then he gave a whistle to signal noble Diomedes, but he just stayed there, wondering how he could do something really bold. Should he take away the chariot, which contained the king's finely decorated armor, pull it by the pole, or lift it up over his head and carry it like that? Or should he take the lives of still more Thracians? While Diomedes turned over these matters in his mind, Athene came, stood by him, then said to noble Diomedes, "Think of going back to the hollow ships, son of great-hearted Tydeus, in case you get driven there in quick retreat if some other god wakes up the Trojans." She spoke. He recognized the goddess by her voice. He quickly climbed up on one of the horses. Odysseus smacked them with his bow. They raced ahead in a rush to reach the swift Achaean ships. But Apollo of the silver bow had not been unvigilant once he'd perceived Athene taking care of Tydeus' son. Angry with her, he went down into that huge crowd of Trojans and woke up Hippocoon, a Thracian counselor, one of noble Rhesus' family. Roused from sleep, he saw that where the horses stood was empty, the fearful carnage with men gasping in their death throes. He screamed in grief, crying out for his companion, calling him by name. Trojans created a commotion, totally confused, as they rushed in all at once, to gaze astonished at the terrible destruction those two men did before returning to the hollow ships.
That's the end of today's audiobook break. You've been listening to Homer's The Iliad, read by Anton Lesser and published by Naxos Audiobooks. It's one of a remarkable series of classic books published by Naxos. For a full list, go to naxosaudiobooks.com. And check out audiophilemagazine.com for reviews of hundreds of audiobooks so you can make the right listening choice. This has been Audiobook Break with Audiophile Magazine. I'm Joe Reed. Good listening.